From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Farming Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. And this morning, I am so excited to be joined by Farming Country's very own producer, Ronald Kelson, to help me comb through the archives and look back at our favorite stories of 2025. From the waters of the Upper Delaware River to the Little World's Fair in Grahamsville, we took you across the region to meet the people who tend to our land, grow our food, and make the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania so special. Join us as we recap our favorites, our highs, and maybe even a few of our lows for this special Best of 2025 edition of Farming Country. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report, but first, news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. The Justice Department's partial release of documents from the Epstein files is drawing criticism from members of Congress, including California House Democrat Ro Khanna, who co-sponsored the legislation that required the release. He says what the Justice Department has provided is incomplete at best.
So far, based on what we've seen, there are just excessive redactions. I mean, there's one document from the New York grand jury, which a federal judge ordered released, totally redacted, 119 pages, all redacted. And there are not the types of documents so far that we were looking for. Now, we haven't done the whole review.
The Justice Department faced a Friday deadline to release the files. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche acknowledged the release was incomplete, but that he expects a complete release by the end of the month. Justice Department says it's suing another four states for not handing over sensitive voter data to the Trump administration. There have now been 22 lawsuits filed in largely Democratic-led states, as NPR's Ashley Lopez reports.
These latest lawsuits have been filed against the District of Columbia, Georgia, Illinois, and Wisconsin. So far, all the states being sued by the Trump administration are states the president lost in the 2020 election. Justice Department officials are demanding states turn over complete, unredacted copies of their voter registration lists, which includes sensitive personal information such as driver's license numbers and parts of voters' social security numbers. Officials say this is an effort to, quote, protect American citizens from vote dilution. So far, only 10 states have complied or started the process of complying. Most states have refused, citing privacy concerns. Ashley Lopez, NPR News.
Conservative leader Charlie Kirk's widow has announced her support for Vice President J.D. Vance for president in 2028. Erica Kirk now leads the influential conservative group her husband founded. She made her Vance announcement during the kickoff for Turning Points conference in Phoenix, NPR's Sarah McCammon reports.
Vice President J.D. Vance has not declared his intention to run for president in 2028, though he is widely expected to seek the Republican nomination. At Turning Points America Fest conference in Phoenix, Erica Kirk pledged her support for Vance.
We are going to get my husband's friend, J.D. Vance, elected for 48 in the most resounding way possible.
After Charlie Kirk's murder on September 10th in Utah, Erica Kirk took over leadership of Turning Point USA, which her husband founded. Sarah McCammon, NPR News.
A Russian delegation will be in Florida today for the latest talks on ending the war in Ukraine. The talks, hosted by Steve Witkoff and President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, will be held in Miami. The meeting comes after a Russian missile strike on the Ukrainian city of Odessa. Officials say eight people were killed and more than two dozen others were wounded. You're listening to NPR News.
Hey there, it's Jason Dole here. I'm checking in with you during this mad rush to the end of the year and saying happy Hanukkah. It's the last weekend of the holiday. If you missed my special report on local Hanukkah observations this week, that story is up now at WJFFradio.org. Also, want to let you know we've got lots of holiday specials still to come, starting in earnest tomorrow night at 7 with selected shorts, followed by Jazz Piano Christmas at 8, a Chanticleer Christmas at 9, and then at 10, it's In Winter's Glow, a relaxing solstice celebration for a chilly winter's night. Happy solstice. We have specials continuing through New Year's. See the full list at WJFFradio.org, where you can also go to make your year-end donation to Radio Catskill. We accomplished amazing things this past year, and we want to continue to do amazing things, making more and even better local news and information programming, but we'll only be able to do that with your help. 2026 will be the first year ever in this station's long history that we will receive zero funds from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It's just you and us now. That's why we need your support. And if you do give now, your donation will have triple the impact. Because from now until December 31st, gifts of $1,000 or less will be matched one-to-one by Newsmatch and by an anonymous longtime Radio Catskill supporter. Plus, gifts of $100 and more will also be entered for a chance to win a two-night stay at the Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast in the town of Walton. Make your donation by the end of the year. Let these good folks triple it. Go to WJFFradio.org to give today. Thank you so much.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. And this morning is a special one. I am joined in the studio and really excited to be co-hosting today's show with our one and only producer, Ronald Kelson, to help me recap 2025. Ronald, welcome back to Farm and Country.
Thank you.
Okay, so this year I think is a really special one because it was the first one that we kind of hosted and then produced together. I'm just curious kind of how it went for you. How did it go? What are some of your highlights?
Yeah, no, it was a great experience. I've never done anything like this before. It's been a great experience. I've loved doing this with you and, you know, making the show every week and finding out about all the wonderful agricultural life and other things like that in our region, because I wasn't aware of it before you started reporting on it. So it's just been a great experience to broaden my horizons and get to work on something with you and put it out for the people to listen to.
Well, Ronald, I'm sure you hear this often, but like you are truly like so easy to work with. And
I haven't
so,
heard that often. I'm kidding.
So easy to work with and so fun to work with. Like you just make this hosting the show and producing the show like such a joy. And I think something that a lot of people don't know is that Ronald like chooses all the fun music that we hear throughout the show, which I think makes this so much more fun. Well, we're going to get to the some of our best ofs in just a few. But before we do that, this week's Star Talk report from Keith Hubbard.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. Tomorrow is the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year. It is when Earth's axis will be tilted the farthest away from the sun. At its highest point in the sky, the sun will only be 25 degrees above the horizon. The solstice marks the beginning of the winter season for us. The good news for those of us who don't like the cold days and long, dark nights is winter is the shortest season. We measure the seasons as the time between a solstice and an equinox, or vice versa. The time between the winter solstice in December and the vernal equinox in March is 89 days. Contrast that with the time between the summer solstice in June and the autumnal equinox in September, which is 94 days. The reason for this time difference is that Earth is closest to the sun in early January. As a result, Earth moves the quickest in its orbit at that time. The Earth's axis is tilted 23.5 degrees from vertical and is currently tilted away from the sun. It is the tilt of Earth's axis, and not the distance from the sun, that ushers in the cold temperatures. The winter solstice is the shortest day of the year, meaning we see the fewest hours of sunlight. Today, we will see just 9 hours and 6 minutes of sunlight. The fact that the amount of sunlight we see fluctuates throughout the year is a result of the tilt of Earth's axis. Celebrate the winter solstice as the shortest day of the year. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future StarTalk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and StarTalk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
Thanks to Keith for this week's report. And I am joined in the studio by our one and only Ronald Kelson.
Hello, hello. Now, Kim, before we heard from the wonderful Keith Hubbard in a StarTalk report, I was asked about my highlights and what it was like producing. But I have to ask you, what was it like hosting? I want to hear what your thoughts were as you started this job and we thrust upon you. Here's Farm and Country. Good luck.
I mean, it has been such a roller coaster, honestly. I admittedly, Ronald, I was really nervous. Rosie Starr has been fearlessly hosting Farm and Country for more than a decade, and she is just incredible. I think her ability to connect with farmers and cover so much of the region was something that I really admire. And so when I stepped into this role, I kind of, you know, tried to embody that energy, but also have our own twist on it. And I think that that has been the best part of hosting this show, just meeting so many different people. I think, you know, it's no secret that I'm new to the area. And I think that hosting this show has been the best way to meet people and see the region, both the land, the water, the air, all of it. So, and I'm excited that we're spending this show talking about some of our favorites.
Yeah, you deserve it, so.
Oh, that's so sweet. Well, okay, so I would love to hear, you know, one of your favorites. What's one that comes to mind for you?
Well, to start off, I think it was very touching to, I'm a Sullivan County boy, born and raised, and I remember bringing up to you for our August 23rd show, it's like, hey, what better way to, you know, get you just continue to introduce you to the area by letting you go and report on the one, the only Grahamsville Little World's Fair.
Oh, yes. I remember this.
Yes. And that was just such a great story for me because I've been going there since I was a baby. I have shirts from the Little World Fair since 2007. They're sitting
in
my
branding.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's awesome. The tie dye and the barn and the logo is just, it's iconic over in our neck of the woods. So it was great to listen to you, see all the farm life. You know, when I was really little, I did not like farm animals, did not like the smells, like all that stuff.
I do not see that.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't. Yeah, I was not a fan, but now, you know, looking back on it and obviously maturing to some degree, it's a great experience. And anybody who comes here for the summer, it's a must see the Little World's Fair.
Yeah, and I remember, like I had mentioned, I remember you pretty much pitching this Grahamsville Little World's Fair for the show. And when I started looking into it, I learned that it has such a rich history. I think it's been going on for like at least 140, 145 years.
Yeah.
And it's like the longest running fair in New York State. And when I was thinking of my favorites, this actually also came to mind because I met so many different types of people. We're going to play the short clip from it. Let's hear it. It's a scorching hot Saturday at the Grahamsville Little World's Fair. And it's here where we meet all kinds of people that make the region's agriculture so special. It's where Barbara Moran and I head down a hill to a small barn.
So we're walking over by our dairy tent. Now, goats, if you don't know, are dairy goats and meat goats. So we have two varieties, but we also have a lot of pet goats here. And goats are so much fun. Later this afternoon, we're going to be having our goat obstacle course, where you'll watch the kids lead them through an array of obstacles. So welcome to our goat tent.
That's Barbara Moran. She's a 4-H program manager at Sullivan County's Cornell Cooperative Extension.
4-H is the largest youth program in the nation. It encompasses four pillars. So we talk about agriculture, civic engagement, STEM, and healthy living. And within that, there are thousands of lessons that come to the children. So when we talk about 4-H, we talk about a 4-H club. Children can also be independent members. And then we push into schools with in-school and after-school programs.
Next to the goats, I meet another set of furry friends.
Yeah, so this is our alpaca tent. Alpacas are another one of our projects that we do here. Many of these alpacas come from Buckbooker alpacas. I'll just take you around the side here, because what the product we get from alpacas is their fleece. So the students, again, the youth learn about care, raising them, many of them from birth on up, the quality of the fleece, how to judge the fleece for what its use is going to be, and then how to make products, because Buckbrook Alpaca has a store.
Just outside the alpaca and dairy tent, 4-H youth manager Sloan is tabling the alpaca fiber store.
I'm going to show you how I made the soap.
Okay, tell me a little bit about how the soap is made.
So we took ivory soap bars and we grabbed some alpaca fiber that we had from our alpacas, and all the 4-H'ers handmade these. So we wrapped the alpaca in it, the alpaca fiber on the soap. We had to grab stockings and we had to put the soap in the stocking. And we had to dunk it in hot water. We had to scrub it a lot until it like was very lathery and white. And then we had to dunk it in cold water to make it all lathery. We had to take it out of the stocking, quickly get over to the table, put it on the table, and then we let it sit for a few days, and it actually turned into these beautiful, colorful alpaca soap bars.
Oh my goodness, can you show me one of them?
Yes. Excuse me, sorry. Sure.
And there's cows too.
That is beautiful.
Yeah, so basically what it does, it exfoliates your skin and makes your skin super soft. And the alpaca fiber, it actually makes the soap last way longer.
Love that report. Love that. Love hearing that.
That was too cute.
Yes, yeah. Good job by you, talking to all these different people and all the different things that are happening at the Little World's Fair.
The kid that we just heard from, Ronald, and this is one of the challenges of hosting sometimes and putting the feature together, is like the kid who actually was showing me the different alpaca items. She was like so excited. Like she was the one who came up to me and was like, "Can I show you my business?" Like,
oh my God, an entrepreneur, a young entrepreneur.
That's what we do here.
Yes, that's what we highlight here. Kim, what was one of your favorites?
Okay, well, we just heard one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Another one I have to shout out is Smoothies with Jason Dole.
Yes.
Yes, that one was so good. Okay, so a little bit about this piece. Jason Dole is our program director here at Radio Catskill and comes in pretty regularly with a fresh fruit smoothie,
yeah,
into the office. And this is something that's relatively new-ish for him. Yeah. And we're going to hear a little bit about this, but he chatted with Eugene Thalman, who owns Sprouting Dreams Farm, and visited him in the Calicoon Farmers Market to just learn how to concoct that perfect summer smoothie. And here's some of that conversation.
Starting about a year and a half ago, I had to make a number of changes to my diet. Like, I had to. Decades of less than mindful eating habits had really taken their toll. And while I'm still changing my ways, I'm still learning, I can say that I finally am doing it. I'm creating new healthy habits and slowly breaking out of the bad ones. Slowly. And the healthiest thing that I've started doing is making my own smoothies. I tend to have one 5 or 6 days a week, typically in the morning, and it has done me a world of good. But this summer, I realized while I'm generally eating better, I'm still not really eating local, at least not when it comes to veggies. And here in our area, with so many great farms, there is no excuse for that. So I knew who I had to talk to.
Hi, I'm Eugene Thalman, Sprouting Dreams Farm. We're at the Calicoon Farmers Market, Sundays from 11 to 2 p.m., and we're year-round, rain or shine, snow, thunderstorm, everything. Someone will always be there. So, yeah.
Eugene Thalman is not just a farmer. He's not just an advocate for local farms and farmer markets. He's also a certified dietitian nutritionist and a smoothie maker himself. I spoke to him at his table at the Calicoon Farmers Market about 6 weeks ago, pausing every once in a while so he could sell sprouts and greens to the public.
$1, $2, $3, $4, $5.
Would you like a hug today?
Sure, I'll take one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should say here that Eugene is also a fantastic hugger, and many customers walked away with greens and a hug, except this guy who settled for a high five.
Would you like a hug one too, man?
Do you want a hug?
I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, high five.
There we go.
Anyway, I got my hug too, and then I started to tell Eugene my deal. I described my typical smoothie. First and foremost, I keep it low sugar at every step. I start with ice and chai that I brew at home, a spiced tea that I brew at home, usually with lots of fresh ginger. I use low-sugar yogurt, typically from Tonja's Farm in Sullivan County, which is the only local ingredient. Then usually a banana on the green side, occasionally half an apple, unsweetened peanut powder for protein, and then for greens.
And then like spinach and or kale, but it's usually from the supermarket. So that's what I've been doing.
It sounds like you're off to a great start. I really love the chai because that's a way of getting those herbs that have a significant way to impact your body from the inside out. I put sunflower shoots in my smoothies. Now, mind you, any green that's very fresh is still really high in B vitamins. When you have greens that have come from the supermarket, greens decrease in nutritional value every day when they sit on the shelf. By the time the spinach gets to the market, 50% of the folate has already been gone. We all here really pride ourselves on freshness and quality. So when you get them at the farmer's market and it's been cut like a day or two ago, you're getting a higher quality green that's more nutritionally dense. I love what you were saying about the no sugar, and berries are great to put in your smoothies.
That sounds so tasty.
I'm sure it is. That's why Jason drinks it every day.
You know, I remember, and I'm like kind of slightly embarrassed to admit this, but I remember when this aired, I think, because I'm not really a smoothie girl. I'm more of a juice girly.
Yeah.
After I heard this, I was talking with my mom about this particular segment. And then like, I think a few weeks later, I was influenced by this segment to make a smoothie. Yeah, and if you guys have not checked out Sprouting Dreams Farm, they have like some of the most delicious microgreens. Yeah, this was a fun one.
Yeah, and just want to shout out Jason, who I've known Jason as long as some people, but it's just great to see him, you know, practice self-care and trying to be healthier and that kind of thing, and just great to see him having more energy, and because everyone in our Radio Catskill ecosystem here, we all care about Jason and want to see him doing well and thriving. So it's just great to see him.
No, absolutely. And that these little actions can make such a big difference.
Yeah.
Okay, Ronald, what is next on your best of 2025 favorites list?
Well, when I brought up this one, you said, darn it, this was mine. This was on mine too. We have a lot of in common favorites.
Which
could be scary. I don't know. But, the National Canoe Safety Patrol story you did on June 28th was absolutely probably my number one. I have a big, strong connection with canoeing and kayaking. When I go up to the Adirondacks, that's pretty much what I do a lot of the time up there. And so I love canoeing. I love kayaking. And it was just great to hear you and all the great water sounds you got. It took me away to my happy place. And it was also just great because it really promoted, you know, water safety and what the patrol does. They're just, you know, people helping people, you know, they're all volunteers and that kind of thing. And it was just a great story. And it was also great to hear Radio Catskill volunteer Tom Candela, who volunteers with them. It was really just a well put together piece. So I really loved that.
Yeah. I remember meeting Tom at the patrol location, and it was kind of chaotic. It was like in the beginning of the morning, but it was especially exciting because they were just on their way out. And I remember it being a particularly very cold day.
Yeah.
Which when you're on, I mean, you probably know this, like when you're out on the water, a cold day, not on the water, feels cold. But when you're in the water, it's just like, freezing.
It can be really freezing. And that's what you guys talk about is hypothermia and that kind of thing, and how we can prevent that, and how the safety patrol kind of deals with people who are not taking that into account.
Well, let's hear some of that.
All right, so you just follow me down to Harrisburg, okay?
Sounds good.
Sorry, it's kind of rushed.
No, that's fine. I'll see you there.
On most Saturday mornings, Tom Candela and a group of volunteers are typically outside the Zane Grey Museum in Lackawaxen, Pennsylvania, taking the time to get the weather report and details on how high the Delaware River will get for the day.
You're going to turn left at the stop sign.
At the stop sign, okay.
But this Saturday, he and the National Canoe Safety Patrol team received some news that they want to act fast on.
Okay, so where are we heading?
Okay, so today, National Canoe Safety Patrol met this morning with the Park Service, National Park Service, and they informed us that there is a big group going out of the livery just above Skinner's Falls. We're going to turn left at the light. At the livery just above Skinner's Falls, I believe it's Landers. I'm not sure if it's Landers or Kittatinny. I forget which one. And they're putting in a group of Boy Scouts. Allegedly, there are 200 Boy Scouts and a possibility of 100 boats. So that's two men per canoe. If they're in canoes, like, they are at a higher risk of tipping over going through Skinner's Falls.
Candela is a member of the National Canoe Safety Patrol, a group committed to keeping river users safe in and out of the water and out of trouble.
What kind of trouble? They could tip over and actually become a swimmer. They can get lodged, their boat can get lodged on a rock where they're stuck between a raging river, if you will, and a big stone, a boulder, and they need help getting off that rock. Or they could lose gear, or they could whatever. You know, basically, though, what we're anticipating in a canoe, as opposed to a raft, rafts are usually a lot more safer going down the rapids, particularly if, you know, you don't have paddlers who are good paddlers. So we're anticipating people going into the water. And our role would be to pull them out and make sure that they're safe.
Skinner's Falls is a popular spot on the Delaware River for rafting, swimming, and tubing that borders Pennsylvania and New York. Candela and I drive down to the entrance of the falls parking lot just off Route 97 in Harrisburg, New York. Today's canoe patrol team is about 5 members, but Candela says it can grow to as many as 20, especially on busier weekends like 4th of July, when people often forget to take simple measures like wearing a life jacket to prevent accidents.
And this is just a clip of our canoe patrol that we aired in June. If you want to hear the full segment and the rest of our Farm and Country shows, you can head to our website at wjffradio.org. Ronald, you mentioned before we listened to that clip that you grew up canoeing and kayaking, yeah?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
We have my grandfather built a house in the 70s in the Adirondacks on a big pond, and the house has been in our family ever since, and that's where we would spend summers pretty much every summer for a week up there. And my dad and I, we would go out on the pond, and he taught me how to kayak, he taught me how to fish, he taught me how to canoe, taught me how to swim in natural bodies of water, so like in a river or in a pond, and that kind of thing. And he pretty much taught me everything I knew about, you know, water safety and that kind of life in the forest and that kind of thing. So it's been something that's been with me for pretty much my entire life, you know, since I was about 6 or 7. So yeah, it's just this report just, you know, always brings me back. And it really is my happy place, is being, you know, on the water and canoeing and mostly kayaking now. But yeah, it's just, you know, one of the things I find the most joy in my life. So
yeah, I can really relate to that. I didn't learn how to canoe or kayak until I was in my early 20s, and it was in Thailand.
Wow.
And I learned. Wow. That was like the first kayak that I had ever.
That's the real wild.
That I had ever gone on. And thankfully, I had like a kayak instructor with me at the time. And then just a few years ago, I was in Big Bend National Park in Texas, canoeing down the Rio Grande. And so, like, I hear this canoe segment, and it just reminds me that, like, the outdoors can really take you to some of the most beautiful places, both here in the Catskills, to the Adirondacks, to maybe you end up in Texas or Thailand. It's really just a great way to see the world. Well, Ronald, I want to leave, this conversation off on a note where we're kind of looking forward. And I'm thinking about 2026 already. I can't believe it. It's already halfway through December. And I'm curious what you're looking forward to in the new year.
It's a tough question. I'm looking forward to continuing working with you, continuing to highlight all the wonderful agriculture and rural life and the wonderful people behind it in our area in the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm looking forward to getting some fresh faces on some of our segments. We have a lot of people.